Now, in connection with the Whitewater affair, and bear in mind that $42 million has been shelled out by the U.S. taxpayer, this is to investigate the Whitewater affair, right? Well, nothing has happened out of the Whitewater affair. Neither Bill nor Hillary, they have no crimes against either Bill or Hillary in the Whitewater affair. The same panel appellate court judges, which had earlier overturned Oliver North's conviction, right? Oliver North, too, is doing appearances saying it's terrible that Bill Clinton perjured himself. This is the man who has boasted of lying to Congress. This is the person who put Manzor El-Kassar on the White House payroll, implicated in the bombing of Pan Am 103, the Achille Lauro hijacking, and the DEA says he brings 20% of the heroin to the United States each year. But, you know, let's not worry about that. But the same panel of judges that overturned Oliver North's conviction and that refused to empower a special prosecutor to look into the leaking of Bill Clinton's passport file during the 92 campaign then picked Kenneth Starr to be Whitewater's special prosecutor. Kenneth Starr was George Bush's solicitor general. That's worth bearing in mind. Long ago, some of the echoes of Watergate, and bear in mind that Lucy Goldberg was a political spy for the Nixon Dirty Tricks campaign. Archibald Cox was the Watergate special prosecutor. He had been John F. Kennedy's solicitor general. It's one of the reasons why Nixon fired him and replaced him with Leon Jaworski, a board of directors of the MD Anderson Fund, a CIA domestic funding conduit, and a Warren Commission counsel. But bear in mind that Kenneth Starr, who also, by the way, is going to be, when he finishes this, is going to be accepting a position with Pepperdine University and a chair that is financed by Richard Mellon Scaife, the same guy who's financing all this stuff against Clinton. Kenneth Starr was George Bush's solicitor general. So bear in mind all of the evidentiary tributaries already running in the back to George Bush. Bear in mind, first of all, that Linda Tripp, was a Bush White House appointee, and he also had these very sensitive clerical positions with the Army Secret Intelligence Command and the Delta Force. Last person to see Vince Foster alive. There's a blonde female hair on Vince Foster. Of course, Linda Tripp is a blonde. Bear in mind that the Justice Department officials in charge of the Waco fiasco were Bush Justice Department holdovers involved in the Iraqgate cover-up. That the very week that Bush was subpoenaed to testify at Iraqgate was the week that Vince Foster turns up dead after Linda Tripp has served him lunch. Now we have Kenneth Starr, George Bush's Solicitor General, being appointed as the Whitewater Special Prosecutor. Now, another of the figures that I think needs to be carefully examined in connection with this entire scenario, and what I'm about to do, by the way, is to advance a conspiracy theory. I hate the term conspiracy theorist because it's a loaded term. It conjures up images of a bunch of acid casualties sitting around with propeller beanies and two-way wrist radios watching Get Smart reruns on their VCRs. And I don't like it, you know. But, yeah, I don't like conspiracy. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. Well, I'm about to advance a conspiracy theory, so, you know, everybody note this. This is a conspiracy theory, and I want to stress that this is not established fact. Newt Gingrich, of course, is the real leader of the Republican Party at this point and is a very, very interesting animal. Newt Gingrich, and I mean animal in the most literal sense of the word, Newt Gingrich, by the way, uses as his political paradigm the operational paradigm of the Wehrmacht. That's the German army during World War II. One of his good buddies is a guy named Steve Hanser, who teaches at West Georgia State College, and he's an expert on the operational tactics of the Wehrmacht. And Newt Gingrich uses the operational paradigm of the Wehrmacht as his political model. He also, by the way, has very strong ties to the U.S. military and for a long time has been cultivating high-ranking military officers as political allies. It's one of the things that I think needs to be reflected on as we take a look at the corpses that have piled up around Bill Clinton. I've already touched on the people who died during the campaign. I've already touched on the people who were killed at Waco, who had been the ATF agents who'd been Clinton bodyguards. We've talked about Vince Foster. A number of other key Clinton people have dropped dead. There was a guy named Thomas Friedman, who was Clinton's special envoy to Rwanda after the massacre that took place there. A couple of years back, they found him floating in the Potomac River. Well, they said he was jogging and he tripped and fell in and drowned. Well, you know, again, you can assess that one for yourself. One of the things that I look at with Newt Gingrich is, first of all, his ties to the military. I wonder how much of what has gone wrong with the people around Clinton might actually be due to the fact that Gingrich allies in the military have been doing things. One of the things that I think is ludicrous about some of the Clinton's right-wing critics. And again, I'm not a big fan of Bill Clinton's. I hope that's clear at this point. I would characterize him as a political animal, again, in the terms that von Bismarck characterized Kaiser Wilhelm I. Quote, he is like a cushion. He always bears the imprint of the last A blank blank that sat on him. Or I guess I could probably say ass. I've already said, you know, blowjob, so this can't be broadcast anyway. But the star thing, the grand jury testimony can be put on the internet and on television. And that's probably more salacious than anything I'm likely to say during the course of this. But it's worth noting that an awful lot of people have dropped dead around Bill Clinton. A lot of his right-wing critics have been making him out to be the arch-killer, you know, sort of like a mafia godfather type. I think it's pretty clear that not only is Bill Clinton not a national security heavyweight, he's a national security lightweight. And I think his leading with his chin from a national security standpoint and trying to open up the military to gays is proof of that. He quite obviously is not in running the United States. If it's ever been clear that Clinton is not in control, it should be clear to a lot of people now. But at the same time, there has been a tremendous amount of mortality around Bill Clinton, not just people dying, but planes that were carrying Clinton and or Hillary and Chelsea have crashed. Ron Brown, who was seen as being able to unite the right and left wings of the Democratic Party during the 96 campaign, died in a crash in Croatia. I would note that the commander of the squadron that was commanding the plane that went down had been replaced the week before for arguing against allowing planes to fly into Dubrovnik Airport. That plane had been carrying Hillary and Chelsea when they had gone to visit the troops in Bosnia a week before that. Military officers disobeyed orders to allow that flight to go into that airport. If you know anything about military culture, you do not disobey the order of a superior officer. That is serious, serious expletive deleted, and you don't do that. Well, they did that. I would also note that the electronic beacon that should have notified people when Ron Brown, where the exact location of where that plane after it crashed, malfunctioned. The plane was being tracked by AWACS aircraft when it went down, and yet the initial search efforts for the plane were all conducted over the Mediterranean Sea. Well, the electronic capabilities of AWACS aircraft are such that they would have known exactly where that plane went down. They would have been able to check the passengers for hemorrhoids with the electronics they had on that thing. And yet, for several hours, the search was being conducted over the Mediterranean. That same summer, Admiral Burda, who had been chief of naval operations, allegedly committed suicide. One of the only high-ranking military officers who was in the military who was Jewish. Also one of the very few high-ranking military officers sympathetic to Bill Clinton. All of a sudden, he got disgraced because of wearing a couple of combat ribbons from the Vietnam War. He got so depressed that he typed two suicide notes on his computer and then walked outside and shot himself in the chest on his front lawn, which, again, if you know anything about the use of combat arms, you're not going to shoot yourself in the chest. You're going to stick the muzzle in your mouth and blow your brains out. William Colby allegedly died under non-suspicious circumstances that same summer. William Colby was, of course, former director of the CIA. His wife was a high-ranking Clinton administration official, and William Colby was an ally of Bill Clinton's politically and felt he should be reelected. William Colby suddenly decided to take a canoeing trip in 25-mile-an-hour winds with choppy waves on the Potomac. He left his computer running, a meal half-eaten, and a bottle of wine with a glass poured on the dinner table. Suddenly decided it was time for a canoe trip, and then he fell overboard. His body disappeared. They found him a week later, washed up, in some reeds by the shore. There has been a very, very clear pattern of mortality around Bill Clinton. I personally do not think that Bill Clinton is doing the killing. I suspect that some of Newt Gingrich's allies within the military have been doing the killing. One of the things that's really sad, too, is the disintegration of the constitutional foundations of our republic. One thing that should not be going on is that Armed Forces Radio, for a number of years now, has been carrying Rush Limbaugh's program. Now that's scary, because that Rush Limbaugh is openly attacking Clinton. That's sedition. And they should not be broadcasting that to the armed services. That's really bad. Bear in mind that Clinton's operational paradigm is that of the Wehrmacht. He wrote a novel called 1945 about a Nazi victory in World War II. I believe his co-author of that was the brother of Steve Hanser, the Wehrmacht expert, whom Gingrich relied on to adopt the paradigm of the Wehrmacht for his own. Now, bear that in mind, because one of the major elements in military strategy is the strategy of divide and conquer. Say you want to attack a fortified position of enemy soldiers, You might try to get around the enemy's right or left flank, cut off their position from reinforcements. You might want to try to cut off their armored forces from their infantry so that they cannot support each other, because both armor and infantry need to support each other. If you have infantry with no armor, they're very vulnerable to attack by armored vehicles. By the same token, armor with no infantry support are very vulnerable to counterattack by infantry using anti-armor weapons. Divide and conquer is the basic paradigm of war. Julius Caesar, of course, coined the term, but it's the basic paradigm of war. If you're going to attack a position, you want to split the enemy's forces, divide them, and then annihilate the two halves. You want to split the armor from the infantry. You want to see to it that an infantry position does not have artillery and air support. Divide and conquer is the basic paradigm of war. And Gingrich has as his political paradigm the operational paradigm of the Wehrmacht. I would also note that Newt Gingrich had very strong ties to the Israeli right wing. His wife, Mary Ann, worked for a think tank and company that has been promoting a free market approach to Israeli industrial development. And Newt Gingrich has been making openly pitching the Israeli right wing. Along with Bob Dole, Newt Gingrich has been proffering legislation to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Now, this is something that peace advocates both in the Israeli camp and in the Arab camp have been opposing very strongly, because it's a highly provocative gesture. Newt Gingrich introduced a bill on the floor of the House of Representatives to have the U.S. Embassy moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which would be both peace advocates on both the Israeli and Arab and Palestinian side have opposed that. And I would also note that Bob Dole introduced a similar bill in the U.S. Senate. Bob Dole, by the way, is Monica Lewinsky's next-door neighbor at the Watergate Hotel. They live right next door to one another, a fact that might not necessarily be significant. I mean, there are coincidences in life, but nobody said this. You know, they just go, gee, well, isn't that something? Bear in mind that Bob Dole, of course, was defeated by Bill Clinton in 1996, and he got Monica Lewinsky living right next door. She did. That's great. And that's terrific. I really hope that she is enjoying her new digs. But I would note that Newt Gingrich has had strong ties to the Israeli right wing for some time. Again, his wife, Mary Ann, works for a company that has been promoting a free market, laissez-faire economics approach to Israel. Gingrich has been openly courting the Israeli right wing. And I would note that Monica Lewinsky's first attorney is... it was a fellow named Ginsburg, right? And he made a public statement that I thought was very strange. And here's where a speculative element, an obviously speculative element, comes in. He made a statement shortly after this whole affair became public, in which he said that neither he nor Monica would do anything to hurt Bill Clinton, because they were both Jewish, and Bill Clinton had been very supportive of Israel. So neither he nor Monica wanted to hurt Bill Clinton. I just thought that was a strange thing for a defense attorney to say publicly under those circumstances. And I filed that one away, and I noted that as Newt Gingrich was courting the Israeli right wing, the Clinton administration was moving in an opposite direction. Last May, Newt Gingrich traveled to Israel, and he addressed the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament, and openly undermined Bill Clinton's Middle East policy. He said flat out, he advocated that the U.S. embassy be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which peace advocates on both sides have been dissing. He also said that he thought that the Clinton administration policy of trying to force Netanyahu back to the peace table to deal with Arafat was wrong, and that basically the United States should support the Israeli generals and the Israeli right wing. Now, Gingrich said this in a speech to the Israeli parliament. That is sedition. That is treason, and it should not have been tolerated. When he got back, however, to the United States, Clinton reaffirmed his policy of trying to get Netanyahu and Arafat back to the peace table, and in particular, trying to get Netanyahu to put a halt on peace settlements, increased settlements, rather, on the West Bank, something Netanyahu has refused to do. When Clinton basically stuck to his guns with regard to Mideast policy, and when Hillary, by the way, made a public statement after Gingrich got back saying she thought that an essential component to having peace in the Middle East was to have a Palestinian state, Monica Lewinsky fired Ginsburg, got a new attorney. She got a guy named Plato Cacheras and also a guy named Jacob Stein, who had worked in the Watergate affair, defending Republicans back in the Watergate affair. I would note that there are a number of evidentiary tributaries running all the way back to Watergate through Iran-Contra, people like David Sentell and others. She, at that point, got Jacob Stein and Plato Cacheras. Plato Cacheras, I believe, had also represented Ed Meese. One of them had. And Jacob Stein goes all the way back to the Watergate case when he had defended some of the Republican defendants in Watergate. At the same time, she got a Bush deputy press secretary as her press spokesperson. So we have yet another Bush person handling Monica Lewinsky. Now, one of the questions I have is whether Monica is either some sort of operative or perhaps being manipulated by a right-wing element of Mossad allied with the Republican Party. Again, the Gingrich political paradigm is the operational paradigm of the Wehrmacht, bearing in mind that the basic military strategy entails divide and conquer. Two groups who have been traditional pillars of support for the Democratic Party are Jewish voters and also female voters. Now, I am of the opinion that with his pitch to the Israeli right wing, with his trip to Israel in which he openly addressed the Knesset, attempting to undermine Clinton's policy, Gingrich was basically working to woo Jewish voters away from the Democratic Party. I would also note that with people like Kathleen Willey and Jennifer Flowers and Paula Jones and now the Lewinsky affair, this is certainly something which would be inclined and which would be something one might expect to alienate female voters. To their credit, a lot of women have stuck by their guns and realized this for the political ploy that it is. But again, in examining the nature of the assault on the Clinton administration, I think one should bear in mind the operational paradigm of Gingrich, that of the Wehrmacht, and bear in mind the basic paradigm, the basic strategic paradigm of war, which is divide and conquer. If you want to view the Democratic Party as a military entity to be destroyed, and that's the paradigm Gingrich uses, dividing Jewish and female voters away from the Democratic Party would be one way to defeat them politically. And I think it makes sense in terms of Gingrich's operational paradigm. I obviously cannot state that this is the case, but I think it may very well be the case, and I think it's something that should be very seriously entertained. I would also note, by the way, as I've stated, I think one of the many things Bill Clinton has been accused of, one thing he could not be accused of is being a fast learner. And he decided that, you know, Robert Bennett, the brother of William Bennett, Reagan's drug czar and former Secretary of Education, that wasn't a good guy to be representing him in this. Maybe he had been Clinton's lead attorney in the Paula Jones case, but he decided he needed some new legal firepower. So he went out and hired a former classmate at Yale Law School named Gregory Craig. I believe his first name is Craig. I'm pretty sure it is. Last name is definitely Craig. Well, Mr. Craig had been the lawyer who got John Hinckley off when John Hinckley allegedly shot President Reagan, bearing in mind all the evidentiary tributaries running back to George Bush. So Clinton basically has gone nowhere fast. I mean, if I were Clinton, I wouldn't hire somebody who'd gotten Hinckley off the hook to try to get me off the hook under the circumstances, bearing in mind, again, all of the evidentiary tributaries running back to George Bush. We're making some good progress here, and I'm going to be drawing some of my conclusions on this about where we've gone. Why don't we take a decent break, reasonably long break at this point. I think we have up until about, 10:30, maybe 11, so we should have some time for questions because I'm making some good progress. Back to voters from the Democratic Party, and when the gambit to split female voters from the Democratic Party apparently did not have the success it did, Monica took a hard tack, no pun intended, in which she fired Mr. Ginsburg, took on a couple of lawyers, Plato Cacheras and Jacob Stein, who go back to Watergate, Iran-Contra. She then got herself a Bush PR person, and I think that's when she began doing that's when she took the hard line that she has taken, again, no pun intended. There are a lot of serious aspects of this as we take a look at what it is doing to our society. First of all, the debasement of law itself. Ken Starr is a... At the same time he's doing this, he is the attorney for the tobacco lobby. Is that a conflict of interest? Because at the same time, the big tobacco has been fighting the Clinton administration's attempts to rein them in. Ken Starr has also been linked possibly to Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi Arabian billionaire weapons dealer who was one of the key players in Iran-Contra. He certainly had a real estate deal with something called Lubbock AK, which in turn was apparently connected with a savings and loan failure. And it appears that Lubbock AK may very well have been a real estate operation run by Adnan Khashoggi. That's not etched in stone, but it certainly is fascinating. His law firm, that is to say Starr's, also had a major conflict of interest with regard to the Resolution Trust Corporation. That should have disqualified him. He has a conflict of interest with regard to Richard Mellon Scaife, who funded a chair at Pepperdine University, whom he is ready to assume when he finishes this. Witnesses have been intimidated, at times being threatened with death. Ken Starr also was in touch with Paula Jones' lawyers years ago. That's a conflict of interest. It's also, by the way, now been established that when Monica Lewinsky testified before the grand jury, that she said there was no deal offered. Basically, she wasn't encouraged to lie, and she wasn't offered a job. It was under the premise that she was, that this whole thing was tacked onto the Paula Jones lawsuit in the first place. Bear in mind also the debasement of law. Linda Tripp violated law by taping Monica Lewinsky. That's illegal, but she has not been prosecuted. It is a major crime for legal professionals to leak grand jury testimony for reasons that I explained. A grand jury is not like a criminal jury. It's not there to determine guilt or innocence. It's there to look for possible evidence of guilt so that a person would be indicted to stand trial. It's a very different phenomenon than a criminal jury, and that is why grand jury testimony is not supposed to be released. It could horribly prejudice somebody's career. That is very, very bad news, and yet the press has not been reporting this kind of thing, and I wonder why that is. Obviously, part of it is corporate ownership of the press. That, to a large extent, the media are owned by people who are calling the shots here, and I mean that quite literally. I also wonder about the possible effects of intimidation on the media. One thing I noted this past February was that Sandy Hume, the son, by the way, of CNN commentator Brit Hume, Sandy Hume had been the fellow who broke the story in a year ago or so ago, or a couple of years ago, about the Republican attempt to oust Newt Gingrich as Speaker of the House. And he then turned up an alleged suicide in February. There was no explanation as to why he killed himself, but he allegedly committed suicide. In June of 1997, you remember I alluded to Lucianne Goldberg and her work as a political spy for the Nixon Dirty Tricks campaign, infiltrated Dirty Tricks squad, infiltrating the McGovern campaign and looking for political dirt on people who were working for George McGovern. Lucy Goldberg was also Mark Furman's literary agent. The main reference that's usually cited for Lucy Goldberg's work for the Nixon Dirty Tricks Squad is a very good book about Watergate called Nightmare, The Underside of the Nixon Years, authored by J. Anthony Lucas, who wrote a series of articles for the New York Times Magazine about Watergate, which then coalesced into a book. Well, J. Anthony Lucas is one of this country's most respected journalists and writers, and he had a new book coming out in 1997. On the eve of publication, he allegedly killed himself. And the New York Times obituary said that he was prone to depression, but then they'll say that in brevity. He committed suicide by, quote, strangling himself with an electrical cord, unquote. Not hanging himself, mind you. Not hanging himself, but by strangling himself to death with a length of electrical cord. Now, that's impossible. You know, small deal, try that sometime. Try taking a cord and wrapping around your neck. I mean, that is absolutely impossible. First of all, you will lose consciousness before you die. You may suffer irreversible brain damage. You're going to pass out. But you can't do it. Now, suicide manuals, by the way, and such things exist for the right to die movement, they counsel that if you're going to hang yourself, which is not a particularly pleasant way to do it, you should have somebody tie your hands behind your back. Because even if you're hell-bent for leather to buy the farm, the fact of the matter is when you kick out that door, when you jump into the noose, all of a sudden, you have second thoughts because it just isn't so great. You know, that's why if you're going to kill yourself, the suicide advocates advocate that you tie your hands behind your back so that you won't, when the noose basically tightens around your neck, try to get out of it, because it's not that easy. Again, you have an instinct to live. And I'll tell you, what you're not going to be able to do is to take a length of cord or rope or anything else and wrap it around your neck and strangle yourself to death. You can't do it. It's impossible. The only more absurd thing that I've ever seen alleged suicide was a guy in Indiana a number of years ago who was found dead of 32 blows to the head by a hammer. In other words, when the autopsy was running, he'd been struck 32 times on the head with a hammer, and initially that was ruled suicide.
Now try that. And imagine this guy. Imagine this guy sitting there, you know, if I had a hammer, you know, sitting there hitting himself in the head. You know, eventually they changed and decided that he'd been murdered, which I thought was a real breakthrough in terms of forensic science. One of the great steps forward in American criminology was when the Indiana coroner decided, no, this was actually a murder. The guy who died of 32 blows to the head with a hammer. But back to J. Anthony Lucas, again, I wonder to what extent messages get through to the media, like, hey, you know, don't tell the truth or you're going to pay the price. I also wonder about Newt Gingrich's contacts in the military. Maybe some of them were out there paving the way for this coup d'etat. Bear in mind, again, this is not in any way to blow my own horn, but the first program I did after Bill Clinton was elected, I predicted that he would be destabilized after doing the thing with the gays in the military, because that was a red flag at the most powerful bull in the country. Again, 60% of the officers in the military are white southern males. They don't see things. To give you an idea of how conservative, this is not to speak against the military. You need a military. But to give you an idea of how established a very different type of culture is in the military from what most of us are accustomed to thinking, as of the early 60s, might even have been the mid-60s, the combat badge of the U.S. Army Rangers, a group of elite airborne troops who traced their heritage back to Rogers Rangers of the were light irregular infantry during the French and Indian War, who used Indian tactics. That's one of the reasons why they were so successful. Well, their badge that Army Rangers sewed on the sleeve of their uniforms showed a tomahawk, again, because the Rangers originally used Indian tactics, showed a tomahawk, an old powder horn, and the Confederate flag, the stars and bars, because the Mosby's Rangers during the U.S. Civil War, a group of guerrilla cavalry from Colonel John Mosby, the Gray Ghost from Texas, were basically Army Rangers, because most of the professional military are from the South. And that's one of the reasons why the South did so well militarily in the Civil War, even though they were outnumbered and outgunned, is because the best officers came from West Point. But that'll give you an idea. When the Confederate flag is part of an official U.S. Army combat insignia as of the early 60s, you're dealing with a very different culture than what most of us are accustomed to thinking about. And when Clinton did the thing with gays in the military, he was waving a red flag at a bull. I mean, these guys, they never liked the idea of integration. And they certainly didn't like the idea of gays being admitted into the military. And I would also point out that the Christian right has been a major factor in determining the fate of the Republican Party. Bear in mind that one of the things Gandhi advised was never mix sex and politics. Another X factor in this whole thing is bear in mind, as Monica Lewinsky and this whole thing was coming to a head, and again, one of the problems with this whole thing is it's so easy to come up with sexual innuendo, and I do not mean any sexual innuendo, but as the thing was coming to a head in August, of course, there were these attacks on the U.S. embassies in Africa. Clinton then responded with cruise missile attacks against Mr. Bin Laden. Now, I don't know, even Janet Reno said she didn't think there was enough intelligence on that, and people were coming up with this wag the dog scenario, which I think is frankly lame. One of the things that should be understood is that the president does not control the country. Just suppose for the sake of example that Clinton, and then now assuming that our intelligence was accurate and that Bin Laden was behind those attacks, the most intelligent response would have been to undertake a long-term counterintelligence search to try to locate Bin Laden and kidnap him along the lines of what was done with Ramzi Youssef in the Philippines, the alleged mastermind, actually the convicted mastermind at this point, of the World Trade Center bombing. That would have been the way, the proper response to these attacks, assuming that what we've been told was accurate. Rather than unleashing high explosives in an area that was bound to produce collateral damage and civilian casualties, which would outrage the civilian populations who would then begin burning American flags and hating the United States that much more, with possibly a cycle of reciprocity yet to manifest itself in terms of more terrorist attacks. But can you imagine, because all of Clinton's left-wing critics then said, oh, this is terrible and this is proof, blah, 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 blah. Now imagine if Clinton had done that. Rather than taking precipitous military action, suppose Clinton had basically authorized CIA, FBI, NSA, and all the rest, find Bin Laden, let's kidnap him, bring him back to justice. That would have been the most intelligent response, because that would not have produced the civilian casualties, which are ultimately going to make for bad, it makes bad, bad publicity. It's going to hurt the United States in terms of foreign policy. It also made us look much more, even more like arrogant dinosaurs than we already appeared to people to begin with. Just imagine the critics in the media and the talking heads, the Republicans, because bear in mind there have been threats of more attacks on U.S. installations. Putin said, oh, this is proof that Clinton can't lead anymore. I mean, here we have American loss of life, threats against American property and installations, and Clinton's completely paralyzed. His presidency is paralyzed. And we obviously have, Clinton has to go blah, 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 blah. He was bound on the wheel at that time. Of course, if he sent in pilots or, you know, Delta Force or Navy SEALs or whatever, and some of them got killed, then, oh my God, look, American boys have lost their lives because of Clinton's political considerations, blah, 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 blah.